The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 426 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. TheSportsRPT on Twitter. We've got two NFL stories that we can finally put to bed. What a finish to the 145th British Open. High drama at Royal Troon in Scotland. Two men going toe-to-toe for the claret jug. And we learned more about a guy named Beef. I'll take you through the tournament round by round, cover all of the big shots. Isaiah Thomas goes after the NBA's number one pick, Ben Simmons, and the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal was back in the news. Those stories coming up here on episode 426 of the Sports Report. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's great to have you aboard with you every Monday on GrizzlyProductions.tv, and keep the five-star reviews coming on iTunes. Let's start in the NFL. Tom Brady announced he will not appeal his four-game Deflategate suspension to the U.S. Supreme Court. Here's what Brady posted on his Facebook page. Quote, "I'm very grateful for the overwhelming support I've received from Mr. Kraft, the Kraft family, Coach Belichick, my coaches and teammates, the NFLPA, my agents, my loving family, and most of all, our fans. It has been a challenging 18 months, and I've made the difficult decision to no longer proceed with the legal process." Can you believe this has been going on for a year and a half? 18 months of Deflategate? Good grief. I've tried to avoid this story as much as possible. It's right up there with Pokemon Go, as far as I'm concerned. Enough already. I wish it would Pokemon go away. What a bummer that the servers were down over the weekend. You know, just what we needed. Something else to keep people staring at their phones all day and night. Like that doesn't happen enough. I was out at a restaurant the other night, and there's a couple there having dinner, some drinks, and they're not even talking to each other. Both have their phones right up to their face. I mean, it's amazing what the world has come to. But here's the first question of the day. Which story are you tired of hearing about more? Deflategate or Pokemon Go? Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. As for this case, the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan rejected Brady's latest appeal last week of the suspension, and that meant that his last hope to avoid serving the suspension would be to appeal to the Supreme Court. He decided not to do it. I wasn't surprised at all, because I've said all along that the Players Association agreed to give Roger Goodell, the commish, final say. It's in the CBA. It's in the collective bargaining agreement. So sorry, guys, it's too late. You can't make the guy judge, jury, and executioner agree to that in writing and then say, whoa, time out here. Wait a second. Now we don't like that idea. Can we take that out? Too late. So for all the moaning and groaning and whining that's been going on about this, the NFLPA, Players Union, needs to take a good look in the mirror because they agreed to it. So whether you think four games is ridiculous, and I thought two games, that'd be a better solution. Four games to me is a bit much, but that's besides the point. That's another argument. The issue really is what the Players Association agreed to in the CBA. You let the commissioner have the power. Sorry, now you got to deal with it. Robert Kraft sounded off, quote, The penalty imposed by the NFL was unprecedented, unjust, and unreasonable, especially given that no empirical or direct evidence of any kind showed Tom did anything to violate league rules prior to, during, or after the 2015 AFC Championship game. What Tom has had to endure throughout this 18-month ordeal has been, in my opinion, as far removed from due process as you could ever expect in this country. From day one, I've believed in Tom and given him my unwavering support in his pursuit to rightfully clear his name of any wrongdoing. That support extends throughout our organization and has only grown more steadfast as the preponderance of scientific evidence has exonerated Tom. Unfortunately, this stopped being about air pressure a long time ago. Oh, let me say this. We've heard from numerous former quarterbacks, even current quarterbacks. We've heard from Aaron Rodgers talk about he likes the football pumped up. He likes it really inflated. So to think that this doesn't go on or that it hasn't gone on in the past, come on. These quarterbacks are very specific. Some equipment guy isn't going to be adjusting the PSI on his own. Really? You think he's going to make that decision and not your multi-million dollar contract quarterback, your franchise guy, Tom Brady? Let's be real about this. So Brady's going to miss the first four games. This is who they play. Cardinals, Dolphins, Texans, Bills. And then he'd be back week five against the Browns. Oh, the Browns. But hey, Cavaliers win a championship. The Indians look good. But man, oh man, the Browns will get to see Brady. Mark it down now. He's going to throw for 400 yards in that one. The Westgate Superbook out in Vegas, this was interesting, still has the Patriots as the favorites to win Super Bowl 51. So even with Brady likely missing four games, they haven't changed anything as far as their favorite. What do you think of the decision by Brady not to appeal? And I'll say this, when you mess with the bull, sometimes you get the horns. And the NFL is the bull. You knew that they weren't just going to let this thing go. So that's where we start here on episode 426. Now let's get to Von Miller. Broncos signed the outside linebacker to a six-year deal through 2021 for $114.5 million, including a record $70 million guaranteed. It makes Miller the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history based on the guaranteed money, and that's what matters, as well as the highest paid player in Denver franchise history. So he's making more than John Elway. Big bucks, no whammies, stop for you Press Your Luck game show fans, which is still my number one all-time favorite game show. The Broncos significantly pumped up the guaranteed money from an offer that Miller had turned down in June. He said, quote, "I'm super happy and excited to be back." Gee, you think? If somebody gives me $114 million, 70 guaranteed, I'd be pretty happy. I'd be super happy with just the 0.5, and you can keep the $114 million. Fletcher Cox of the Eagles, great interior defensive lineman, he got $63 million guaranteed. So you knew what the ballpark was. You had a figure out there. Miller's contract pushes him into the neighborhood of quarterbacks as far as that guaranteed money again. He is only behind Andrew Luck of the Colts, who signed the $140 million deal a couple weeks ago with $87 million guaranteed. Miller was designated the franchise player back in February. The Broncos and Miller had a deadline of last Friday. That's a league-wide deadline for franchise players to sign long-term deals. Sources said that Miller and his representatives had requested a trade if the Broncos did not increase their offer. The Broncos were not going to trade Miller. They rely on defense. He's a stud. Their offer in June was just under $40 million guaranteed in the first couple of years. Now, remember, Fletcher Cox, $63 million. $40 million for Von Miller, not going to happen. Miller obviously wasn't happy with that. made it clear that he was not going to play under the franchise tag. Team was frustrated. He was frustrated. They couldn't get anything done by the end of the off-season program in mid-June. Miller skipped all of the conditioning and on-field work with the team. He did go to the White House, though, and attended the ring ceremony. And then we all saw the story about how he took a picture and cropped John Elway out of it, the picture taken at the White House, and he posted on social media. So this was getting a little bit ugly. Former first-round pick in 2011, 60 sacks in 5 seasons. His postseason run was tremendous. 5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, an interception in 3 playoff games. And we know what he did in the Super Bowl. Forced a fumble, had a sack of Cam Newton that led to their first touchdown. And this is pretty simple. The Super Bowl is the biggest sports event in our country by far, and one of the biggest in the world. When you are the MVP of that game and part of a team that relied very, very heavily on defense, you get paid, okay? It's that easy. The Broncos lowballed him in June. They should have just ponied up then. It would have saved a lot of time, and we would not have had to hear about this almost every day because we know the NFL rules, and you get coverage 24/7, 365. Like Deflategate, I am thrilled that this dispute is over. It is about time. So we will move on from Deflategate and Von Miller from here on out. This is the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on the Grizz. This is episode number 426. We are on iTunes, the podcast section there. Keep the 5-star reviews coming. And I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Always looking for new followers there. Today's show is brought to you by our great sponsor, iHome. iHome has a new WeatherTough line of Bluetooth speakers. They're waterproof, rust-proof, and military standard shockproof. These things are tough. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, and the summer's here. People taking vacations, you're doing a lot of traveling, or if you just want new headphones or earbuds for hanging out at your home and relaxing, go to the website iHomeAudio.com. Look at all their fantastic products. You can also check out their accessories and their apps, iHomeAudio.com. Plus, iHome's the number one brand in digital speakers. Number one. The sound quality can't be beat, and their products look really, really cool. Some sharp stuff. So go to the website again, iHomeAudio.com. Big golf segment here on episode 426 of the Sports Report podcast. Now, you know, I don't play golf. I don't find it very exciting. But if you've listened to the show, I always follow the majors very, very closely. And I think the average Joe sports fan is more into golf when a big name is on the leaderboard. And that was the case for the British Open at Royal Troon in Scotland. There are a lot of great young golfers on tour now. Day, Spieth, McIlroy, plenty of others. But all eyes were focused on a 46-year-old this weekend, Phil Mickelson. Got everybody's attention right from the start with the opening round 63. A lefty came so close to making history. His putt from 16 feet on the 18th whipped out. It looked dead center, and then it broke late to the right, and it lipped out. Phil could not believe it. His caddy fell over backwards. Everybody was shocked. I think Phil said he was about to shed a tear. It looked good, and that would have given Phil a 62, something that no golfer has ever accomplished in a major. The conditions were ideal on Thursday. Phil and others took advantage. He finished 3 shots ahead of Patrick Reed and Martin Keimer of Germany after round one. They were both 5 under. 8 others were 4 shots behind Mickelson at 4 under. Jordan Spieth posted an opening round, even par 71. a day. The number one ranked player in the world was +2. The conditions at Royal Troon changed drastically on Friday. Did they ever? Strong winds and rain made it miserable for some. Really depending on what time you played. If you went out in the morning, you're okay for the most part. If you play in the afternoon, two words. Good luck. It was really tough out there. Jason Day shot a 1-under-70, said it felt like a career-low round. That speaks to the weather. Day was one of only three players who broke par in the afternoon on day two. And of the 26 players who were still under par after round two, only four of them played in the afternoon. It was like playing two different courses. And I can see why some guys would get upset. But you can't control Mother Nature, especially at the British Open. Personally, I like to see them playing in wind and rain. You know, it is a major after all. It's not supposed to be easy. We're not down at the beach playing miniature golf here. I don't need to see everybody at 20 under par. Anywho, Phil shot at a 69 to go to 10 under heading into the weekend. The man on a mission Friday was Henrik Stenson of Sweden. He had a 65, the best round of the day, to go to 9 under, just one shot back of Phil. And in 2013, you may recall, Phil won the Open at Muirfield, while Stenson came in second. So they're familiar with each other, mutual respect for each other, which was good to see. I'm sure many were surprised to see Keegan Bradley's name up on the leaderboard. He shot 67-68 and was 7 under, 3 back going into Saturday. Bradley won the PGA Championship in 2011, but has not won a tournament in 4 years. He came in ranked number 120. Other notables through Friday, Zach Johnson -5, Sergio Garcia -4, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, and Rory were all 2 under. They were 8 shots back. Day was 1 over. Spieth and Bubba Watson were +4. The cut line was 4 over. Jordan shot a 75. Bubba a 76 on Friday. And how about Billy Horschel? Gotta mention him. He went from a 67 to an 85 on day two. That is an 18-shot difference. Wow. On to Saturday. They decided not to cut or roll the greens for round three. The Open Championship basically became a match play event. Phil and Stenson separated themselves even more from the field. And there were some big momentum shifts on Saturday. Phil made a 25-foot birdie on 13 for a 2-shot lead. But on the next hole, he 3-putted while Stenson birdied to tie it up. Phil took the lead back with a birdie on the par 5 16th. But Stenson responded with a gorgeous 3-iron into the wind on 17. Phil missed the green and bogeyed, allowing Stenson to claim the lead. After round three, Stenson was 12 under. His 68 tied for the low score on day three. Phil was 11 under, and the veteran Bill Haas was in third at 6 under. But it really was between Stenson and Phil. In fourth place was the fan favorite. I have to take a minute to talk about this guy, Andrew Johnston, better known as Beef. Yeah, Beef. He was 5 under. The popular Englishman with a belly and a beard was under par for the third straight day. He was playing well. This guy once ate a 32-ounce steak. Now, I'm a pretty big eater. I mean, I can put some food away. A 32-ounce steak? I don't know, but he is quite a character. He's 27 years old. He is nice as can be. He said, quote, "At the end of the day, I'm just a normal guy who happens to golf. I'm no different than anyone else. I'll talk to anyone, and I don't care where they're from and who they are," end quote. You know, with everything going on in our country and around the world and in Turkey and in Baton Rouge, I think the world would be a much, much, much better place if more people had his outlook on life. He's a genuine, nice person, and the fans just love the guy. He was 7 back. J.B. Holmes was 8 back at -4. The weather was not an issue at all on Sunday. Outstanding approach shot on the first hole by Phil. That left him with a tap-in for Bird. Stenson three-putted on #1 for a bogey. Another two-shot swing between these two guys. And #1 is not considered a tough hole. In fact, the first four holes aren't extremely difficult. Phil moved to 12 under, Stenson 11 under, and Stenson just went off. Phil's wedge shot whipped out on #2. He darn near sank that baby. Stenson answered with a really nice birdie putt, and they were all even at -12. Stenson made another nice putt on #3. Phil pushed his short putt to the left, so Stenson went in front by 1 at 13 under. Phil bounced back with an eagle on #4 to go to 14 under. His second shot was just phenomenal. Stenson made a short birdie putt, and guess what? They were tied again. It was really fun to watch. It was a great back-and-forth battle, a two-horse race for all the marbles, and nobody else was even close. A nice birdie by Phil on #6 to move to 15 under. I mean, these guys were tearing it up. Shot after shot after shot on the money. Stenson answered with a birdie to keep it knotted up. These two were playing at a really, really high level. A rare miscue by Phil on #7. His tee shot went way, way to the left. Somehow it ended up on the grass, the very edge near the mud. He got out of that spot, though, in fine fashion. He parred the hole. Could have been a lot worse. Stenson did not take advantage. His birdie putt, which wasn't easy but makeable, wasn't close. And then that took them to the infamous postage stamp hole at 15 under. Phil's tee shot was excellent. Stenson also had a sweet tee shot. I mean, they were making this look easy. That hole had been torturing players for 4 days. Stenson sank his birdie putt, his fifth birdie in 7 holes. It was a terrific hole for him. Phil missed his putt, which was shorter. So Stenson now 16 under, one shot up. Phil didn't do a whole lot wrong, but there was one, you know, maybe he'd like to have back. To the back nine, Sunday. Phil started the day 1 behind. He was still 1 back. Mickelson missed his birdie on the 9th. Stenson had an easy par putt to remain 1 up at 16 under. Phil's 7-iron from the rough was picture perfect on #10. He has such a great feel, just tremendous hands. He sank his birdie putt after Stenson rolled in his birdie. A clutch putt by Lefty to stay 1 back. He was at 16 under, Stenson 17 under. Stenson was a birdie machine, but his par putt on #11 whipped out. So they were even again going to the 12th tee. They were both 16 under. Phil got into the rough on #12, some pretty thick fescue. I just like using that word, fescue. Stenson had a 38-foot birdie putt. He had the right line, left it a little bit short. Mickelson had a very similar putt, and guess what? He drilled it. Great speed. What a par putt by Phil on #12. And I thought, oh, maybe momentum is shifting to Mickelson here. It really looked like Stenson was going to go up a shot there. Phil parred 13 and 14. Stenson sank a long birdie putt on 14 to go 1 up with 4 holes to play. A tremendous putt. He was 17 under, Phil 16 under. Again, it's like a match play event. 46-year-old Mickelson, 40-year-old Stenson. Stenson looking for his first major. On 15, and this was a key hole, maybe the biggest hole, Stenson buried a 50-footer from the fringe. Incredible stuff. Mickelson settled for par and fell to 2 shots behind at 16 under. Phil had 0 bogeys, but was still 2 back. I mean, that's how good Stenson was playing. On to 16. Phil just missed a long putt. Stenson breathed a sigh of relief. The cameras caught him. The ball rolled just to the side of the hole. Man, was that close. They both ended up birdieing the 16th. So Stenson 19 under, Phil 17 under with two to go. Stenson's tee shot on 17 was perfect. Phil's rolled off the green down a hill, and I think his fans were saying, uh-oh, at that point. He did save par with a very, very nice putt, and I think that was a must-make at that point to have any type of chance. Stenson's birdie putt missed to the left, but he was still up two with one hole to play. On to the 18th. Stenson minus 19, Phil minus 17. Stenson's tee shot almost rolled into a bunker, and that would have made things interesting. That would have put a little bit of pressure on him. It was about a foot away, very close to going in, but it didn't. Phil parred the 18th. He posted a 65, his lowest final round ever in a major. But this Open Championship belonged to Henrik Stenson, and he went out in style. A 20-foot birdie putt that made a little left turn and fell in the cup for a final round of 63, an appropriate ending. He wound up 20 under for the tournament. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap. I mean, Phil played outstanding, Stenson just a little bit better. So there's not much Phil could do. Stenson was in a zone after that first hole when he three-putted. He earns the claret jug. Stenson, not known as a great putter. That's been his Achilles heel over the years, but you could not tell it over the past 4 days. His putter was on fire. And not only was it his first major title, he is now in the history books. Listen to some of this stuff here. It's remarkable. His 63 tied Johnny Miller for the lowest final round by a major champ. I think Miller, by the way, does a great job in the broadcast booth. He's very honest, not afraid to question, and even criticize the players if he feels it's justified. And that's tough to find in this day and age of homerism among media bobbleheads. At 40, Stenson's just the ninth player to win his first major at 40 or older, and he's the first man from Sweden to win a major. His previous best was the tie for second that I talked about at the 2013 Open, which Phil won. That was Phil's last victory. Total score, 264. That is a new record for a major tournament. David Toms had a 265 at the 2001 PGA Championship. Stenson also tied Jason Day's record for lowest score under par at 20 under. Day just set that last year at the PGA Championship. On Sunday, Stenson made 10 birdies, including four over the last five holes. I mean, the guy was a machine. He was like a robot. Just couldn't miss. He had a 31 on the back nine. This is the British Open. Phil had a bogey-free final round. And yet he still was three shots back. He was 17 under, his 11th runner-up finish at a major. He's won five of them, runner-up 11 times. J.B. Holmes was third at 6 under, Steve Stricker fourth at 5 under. So Americans played well. Rory and Sergio were 4 under. Rory shot a 67 on Sunday. Beef was minus 3. He shot a 73 on Sunday. Nice paycheck for him. Dustin Johnson, your U.S. champ, and Bill Hawes both 2 under. But what a duel. What an exciting weekend at Royal Troon. Good for Henrik Stenson. Good for golf. Like I've said, I'm more of a baseball, basketball, football type of guy. Get into hockey, more so in the playoffs. Golf, you know, not so much. I think Mark Twain called it a good walk ruined. But this one, I watched the whole thing. From the first hole to the 18th, I'm taking my notes hole by hole. I thought it was that interesting. So your thoughts on the British Open are welcome on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT. We're with you every Monday on grizzlyproductions.tv. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, love to see the 5-star reviews there. Oh boy, Isaiah Thomas, Tom. You know, sometimes you just wonder what people are thinking. Sixers coach Brett Brown actually defended their number one pick, Ben Simmons, after Isaiah thought it necessary to rip the teenager for sitting out summer league games. The Sixers decided not to play Simmons for 2 days in a row last week. Brown said that Simmons wanted to play, but after meeting with the team's coaches and medical staff, they decided to sit him out. Brown said, and I quote, "This is our direction. It has nothing to do with him." Isaiah, who we know has tremendous credentials as a player, 12-time All-Star, Hall of Famer, two titles with the Pistons, the Bad Boys, he said on NBA TV, quote, "You're 19. Earn your money, get on the floor, and play." He also criticized Simmons for taking selfies at the game. Now, Simmons is going to make more than $5 million in his rookie year with the Sixers. He also signed a $20 million deal with Nike. In his first three games, he was averaging 11 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, playing 30 minutes a game. Great passer. Everybody was giving this guy 5-star reviews, 2 thumbs up, 6'10", can handle the rock. Not a great shooter, but what vision. I mean, gorgeous passes. This is my issue with Isaiah. Number one, it wasn't like it was Ben's decision to play or not to play. That was a team decision. So if you want to criticize anybody, rip the Sixers, not Ben Simmons. Number two, it's summer league. I mean, seriously? I mean, when have people got upset about summer league games? Unbelievable. And I actually was watching this because I wanted to see Ben Simmons. You know, I live about an hour from Philadelphia. And Isaiah should worry more about his broadcasting skills. I will leave it at that. What do you think about Isaiah Thomas getting on the case of Ben Simmons for not playing in the summer league? And Jalen Rose did as well. And usually I like Jalen Rose, but guys, it's the summer league. And it's not like he set the whole thing out. He played, and he played well, and he's playing about 30 minutes a game. I've never heard guys get so upset about the summer league before. So let me know what you think about that. NBA fans, you can chime in on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Final topic today is the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal, which was in the news last week. First off, I fully understand 99% of you are completely unwilling to change your stance on this subject. You have your opinion. You're not going to reconsider. I get it. Court documents that were revealed in a case between Penn State and its insurance company, which made $92 million in total payments to settle more than 30 civil claims in the Sandusky scandal. Sandusky's serving 30 to 60 years on a 45-count child molestation conviction. The depositions were unsealed, and one man said that when he was 14, Sandusky molested him in a shower. This was back in 1976. He claims he told Joe Paterno, who allegedly said he did not want to hear about it, that he had a football season to worry about. Mike McQueary said in a deposition that former Penn State assistants Tom Bradley, who's now at UCLA, and Greg Schiano, who's now at Ohio State, were aware of the sexual abuse involving Sandusky and children. That's what brought this issue back into the headlines. Do I know if this information is true? No, I don't. But I do know, as I've said all along, that more needed to be done by high-ranking officials at Penn State at the time. Graham Spanier, who was the president, Tim Curley, who was the AD, Gary Schultz, who was a vice president, and I will include Joe Paterno in there. Now, Paterno defenders say that Joe reported what McQueary told him in 2001 to his superiors, and therefore he's not to blame. Let me ask you one question, all right, and just think about this. If Mike McQueary had told Joe Paterno that he saw Jerry Sandusky with Joe's grandson in the shower of the Lash football building, as opposed to another boy that Joe did not know, do you think Joe would have only told his superiors and then left it alone? Would you have acted that way if it were your grandson? Or would you have gone to the authorities when your superiors did nothing? 10 years went by from the 2001 shower incident that McQueary witnessed until Sandusky was arrested. 10 years. Four more children were molested after 2001. And that's the part that really, really sickens me and disgusts me. And I'm not just pointing the finger at Joe here, and I don't believe he was an evil person, but more needed to be done, period. He did a lot of good for that school as well. But in this case, more had to be done. He made a mistake. And it's despicable to me that cases involving Spanier and Schultz and Curley still have not gone to trial. That is reprehensible. Joe could have gone to the police too. Sandusky went on to abuse young boys for 8 more years. And nobody reported the 2001 incident to the authorities. And it's not about the football program. It's about doing what's right. Too many people, I think, got caught up with the football side of this story instead of the victims. And that was the real tragedy here. That should have been first and foremost on everybody's priority list. And they decided not to go to the police, did not go to the authorities. And it's a sad state of affairs. Hate to end the show on a note like that, but we're out of time. 30 to 40 minutes, fast-paced, high-energy, opinionated sports talk without the homerism that you're used to. And you can comment on all of our topics going back to Deflategate and Tom Brady and Von Miller, Isaiah Thomas, this Penn State issue, certainly the British Open, the duel between Mickelson and Stenson. You can sound off on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Would love to have you follow me there on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I just tweeted over the weekend. If you run into anyone who says the Yankees should be buyers at the trade deadline, just smile and slowly walk away. Because if you hang around that person and keep listening, you're only going to get dumber. I know they beat the Red Sox Sunday night, prime time. But listen, they are not a legitimate contender. They should be selling, not buying. They don't want to give away any pieces that they have in the farm system. They're trying to build that back up, build from within with younger players. That's a smart move. That's the way to go. And I'm a Yankees fan. They should not be buyers at the trade deadline, plain and simple. Let me know what you think on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. If you listen on iTunes, feel free to give us a nice 5-star review there. That helps to promote the show. I will talk to you next Monday. Have a great week, everybody. This has been episode number 426 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.